This is the TSN MMA show with Aaron Bronstetter and Bazooka Joe Valtellini.
The much-anticipated return of Duho Choi is upon us as the UFC rolls into St. Louis for their first event of 2018 this Sunday. Max Holloway back in March, and we will finally see if Frankie Edgar has the answer. Demetrius Johnson suffers an injury, postponing his potential super fight with TJ Dillashaw. Cyborg gets the job done against Holm, but her next challenger could be her toughest test to date. We're back, 2018, Joe. Good
yeah,
to have you here.
Time flies, man. What episode is this for us? We're already at almost episode 20, I think.
I don't keep count.
No? You have that much fun, you don't keep count.
Yeah, I guess we should. If there's like episode 100, we can do something a lot.
Yeah, like something special.
Fun.
We can dress up in tuxedos and no one will see us, but just me and you.
It'll just be like the Canadian MMA Awards. We'll only give awards to Canadian fighters.
I agree. I don't mind that.
Yeah. So we've got a Canadian fighter fighting soon, Jeremy Kennedy in Australia next month. That should be fun.
Yeah, I don't know much about him.
He's undefeated. One of the guys that I think has a lot of upside in terms of Canadians in the UFC, but he's got a tough task. He's fighting Alex Volkanovski, an undefeated featherweight from Australia. So should be interesting to see what happens.
Another Canadian I'll keep an eye on.
Yeah, so
we need a new star, right?
Yeah, we need several. Let's hope for the best. And Rory's fighting soon, so we've got that going on in terms of Canadian MMA. Max Holloway, Frankie Edgar, they're announced for UFC 222 in March. But before we get to that, I want to touch on Cyborg. UFC 219, we didn't get a chance to really break that down and go over it. And I think right now, at this point in time, it's probably been a little bit too long for us to really go in depth on it. But Cyborg, great performance against Holly Holm. The crazy thing about that is I gave Holm the fifth round, and I don't know if it was just a pity round because I thought that she did really well at the end of that round.
Stick in there.
Yeah, she hung in there, but that was her most aggressive round, in my opinion. If two of the judges would have given her that round, Holm would have won the fight, which I think is absurd.
Yeah. I mean, I was the cottage I was at, I couldn't watch the pay-per-view, which was disappointing. But from what I watched, the highlights, the reruns of what I could watch, she dominated, right? So, I mean, I understand that people, I just think they gave Holly way too much credit. She was getting dominated. So, I mean, at this point, I think that would have been one of the worst calls that I would have seen if we would have given the nod to Holly.
It would have been a really sour way to end the year.
It would have been terrible. It would have been a bad way, especially coming off of really great events. The last one wasn't the most exciting, but still a great year to end like that would have been terrible.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, with Dana White recently saying he thinks Amanda Nunes should be the next opponent for Cyborg, I wholeheartedly agree. That's the fight.
Yeah, I agree. But Cyborg was saying she wants someone else in the division before Nunes has to step up.
Let me explain why that does not make any sense. And I explained it a little bit on Twitter.
So why is Cyborg saying this?
Well, Cyborg wants to keep fighting contenders at 145. She wants, Megan Anderson, who I believe is injured and is unable to fight her for some reason or other. And then she mentioned Pam Sorensen as another name, who's a contender that's unsigned contender outside the UFC in the featherweight division. So this is why that is completely ludicrous, in my opinion. Amanda Nunes has fought at 145 before.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at FightMatrix.com, FightMatrix.com is an autonomous website, but they rank every division overall in MMA, so inside the UFC, outside the UFC. And at 145, here are their top three women's 145ers. You've got number one is Cyborg.
Yeah.
Number two is Julia Budd, who's the featherweight champion in Bellator. And then you've got Jermaine Durandamay at number three. Nunes at 145 beat Julia Budd in the first round,
mm-hmm.
early in her career, and has also also defeated Jermaine Durandamay in the first round. So those are two of the top three ranked 145ers. Another win that she had at 145 is over Eddie Ann Gomez, who recently beat Pam Sorensen, the person that is now being touted by Cyborg as a future contender. So at the end of the day, Nunes has beaten the best of the best at 145 outside of Cyborg.
Yeah.
Correct?
100%.
So what are
you
we doing
me.
Here?
You sold me.
So, and then there's the other argument on the flip side of that she's going to slow down the 135 division. Because, the 135 contenders.
Yeah,
the 135 contenders are going to, unfortunately, get the short end of the stick here. But my answer to that is, what 135 contenders? So Pennington's injured. She got into that ATV accident or whatever it was. And she's out for a couple months. I think 6 months at the earliest I heard is when she could come back in the summer. She was the person that was supposed to fight Nunes next, and then she got injured.
So what's Cyborg's thinking?
I think A, Cyborg doesn't want to fight somebody from Brazil.
Yeah, the Brazil connection.
And B, she wants there to be a legitimate 145 division when really there just is not the depth of talent in the MMA
and that's
world
not really,
as a whole.
That's not the way the UFC is going either. Yeah. Super fights and a lot of those bigger fights happening. But I like that Cyborg that she's here. She wants to establish a solid division. But,
yeah,
man,
but the
money
other thing
fights.
I don't get is reportedly, and Cyborg herself has said this, that UFC 219 was the third biggest third most bought pay-per-view of the year, third best buy rate. Meltzer reported the other day, Dave Meltzer, that it's in the 380,000 range. So if that's the case, Cyborg is a legitimate seller.
Draw. Yeah.
It's a legitimate draw. Because women's fights outside of Ronda have never done anything close to that.
Yeah.
So now you have her against the champion in the other division. That's the biggest women's MMA fight ever.
Yeah, but
ever.
That's ever. But is it they want to build it up more? Does she want to have more fights? Because after that, then what? Right?
Well,
she goes back to holding
the
division.
Then you figure it out. You go back to the drawing board. But make the big fight now. If you can make the big fight now, you make the big fight now.
Yeah, well, the hype's there.
Yeah.
Get
like
more
you look
eyes.
At Demetrius and TJ. Demetrius' argument against TJ fighting at flyweight against him was he's not the champion. Well, TJ's the champion now.
Now it's
so
the champion.
So they're
going
to try to make that fight. Now is the time to make that fight. Cyborg and Nunes. Nunes is still the champion. There's no contenders, no obvious contenders. I mean, you look at the others, like Kat Zingano is fighting at UFC 222. And she's fighting against, why can't I, my brain's broken today,
did
Joe,
you watch after this, yeah, but did you watch Kat Zingano on Sports Religion?
No, I haven't watched it yet. I'm dying to watch it.
Yeah.
But pretty much to the crux of my argument here, Amanda Nunes, if I can't even remember the name of the person that's fighting Kat Zingano, who I think is like the number two contender right now, then there's no contenders. There's nobody, and that fight's in March. So if with that in mind, now is the time to make that fight.
I like it.
You make that fight now. Hopefully there's a card coming up in Brazil, like a pay-per-view card coming up in Brazil in April or May, and then the months that haven't been announced yet, or June.
But didn't Amanda Nunes come out and say she didn't want to fight Cyborg?
No, Nunes has come out and says she does want to fight.
She doesn't want to fight. But what wasn't there talk?
Cyborg
said
she doesn't want to fight another Brazilian.
Another Brazilian. Yeah. So it was Cyborg saying. I thought it was Amanda saying
and
that
Amanda
she didn't
said,
want to
when
fight.
When Cyborg won the belt, Amanda said, you know, I want to stay at 135. And at first she had said, I want to fight. So I'd be interested in fighting the champion at 145. But that was when Duranda May was the champion, who she had already beaten. Or Holm was going to be the champion. I don't think she had her sights set on Cyborg, so to speak. But now I think she knows that's a big fight. And I think Nunes could fare very well against Cyborg.
Absolutely. I think she could. Her striking's on point. I think she can stand a little bit rangy. She's got that long reach. I think she can do really well. I mean, you just got to avoid that Cyborg power. But, I mean, there's a chance. I think, like you mentioned, she's got I think she is the best contender.
And then, of course, there's Khabib. And now the whispers that I've been seeing is that Conor is very interested in fighting Khabib. Even though he probably
shouldn't. I think that's a terrible fight for Conor.
But there's also been rumblings that there's a chance that the next fight they make for the title is Conor versus Khabib, and they're just going to bypass Tony Ferguson, who's the interim champion. Now, if that happens, that's a farce.
That is.
You can't
do
that.
No, I think the fight, if Conor's coming back to MMA, I feel it has to be Ferguson.
I agree with you.
I 100% agree.
I think that I
or
was thinking
Khabib
about this on,
Ferguson, and then the winner gets Conor.
I was thinking about this on my way here. I think that Khabib versus Ferguson could be the most competitive fight you can make in MMA right now.
Short of maybe
Dillashaw and Demetrius.
I agree that.
And even Cyborg and Nunes is pretty competitive. But that would be a really exceptional high-level fight. You're talking about the two highest-level guys at the toughest division in the sport.
I agree. I think that's the fight to make in MMA. And I mean, Conor's in no rush, and I know Dana White has come out and said he's going to strip Conor, or I don't know. But does Conor really care? Conor's going to come back and do whatever he wants to do anyways. But there's still even talks with GSP. I know Faraz Sahabi came out saying, hey, GSP, I'm out for now, but if GSP wants if Conor wants it, I just think that's another terrible fight for Conor. Whoever wants to fight Conor, it's terrible. If he fights Woodley,
Ferguson's probably his best bet.
Best bet, yeah. Khabib's a terrible matchup.
Yeah, like I told you, I think I've mentioned this on previous episodes, that I did a poll of which champion would be the easiest matchup for Conor. And again, easiest matchup for Conor is still a tough matchup for any of these people, but it was Holloway, Ferguson, Woodley, and GSP at the time was the champion, and most people picked Holloway, I guess because Conor's already beaten Holloway.
Yeah.
I personally think that Ferguson is the easiest
matchup
for him of those four.
Of those four, yeah.
And I still think that Ferguson's going to beat him.
I just think the Holloway, the weight cut's an issue as well, so that'll play into a factor, but yeah, I think
Ferguson
Holloway's
have to come up, I think. I don't think
No, he'll never go back. But you're right. Ferguson is the fight for him. And Connor's not stupid. He's calculated. He's going to come back for a fight that plays in his favor. I don't know if he comes back and fights Khabib. Especially, you haven't been working your wrestling. You spent this last year focusing all on boxing. Yeah. So you haven't even looked at the ground. I mean, I'm sure you're still training. He's an athlete. He's a martial artist. But come on, you spent a lot of time focusing on your feet where that time should have been spent on the ground if you're fighting Khabib.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, the thing with Conor is he hits you once and it changes the fight.
Yeah, but like, you're talking Khabib, right? If he takes you down, it's over too.
And
really.
Khabib walked through a wheel kick. Like, Barboza throws a wheel kick
at him. He can take a shot.
He just walks right through it. I was like, whoa! But the difference between
Conor and Barboza, though, Barboza's more that brute style power. You can see it coming where Conor's a little bit more sneaky. I think Conor prides himself not really on having exceptional power. He has good speed, good precision, good timing. That's what makes him dangerous, right? So I think Khabib can handle that and take him down. I just think it's a terrible fight for Conor. If I'm a fan and I don't care what the best fight is, I would love to see GSP. That's just me because being Canadian and liking GSP, that's the fight I'd want to see as a fan. But what makes sense, it's Ferguson.
And I think Conor needs to fight soon. And the reason I say that is, you know, Dana White has said that Conor could be stripped of the title if he doesn't defend in the first half of this year. If that happens, I think Conor loses a little bit of leverage. Not that he loses that much leverage because he can basically pick his fight from there, but I think that Conor likes having that position of power where he is the guy in the division right now. Like the winner, you know, the interim title championship has to fight Conor. He loses that kind of power over the division and over prospective opponents if that happens. If they stripped Conor of the title, I would say GSP is the next fight to make. Like Conor's got no title right now, and Conor's more interested in money than championships, make that fight. That's a big money fight.
But that size difference, man, it'd be just, I don't know. It's
make it
huge.
A 155. Make George cut.
No, I don't think GSP can come to 155.
He said he can. Ferraza said he can. I mean, he just went up to 185, which is the difficulty. He'd have to change his whole lifestyle. But
155, yeah. I mean, if you GSP does hold a lot of muscle, if you'd have to lose a lot of muscle mass, one. As a welterweight, and now I can say as a middleweight, GSP's not a tall guy. GSP's probably 5'9"-ish. Yeah. He's not really tall. He really has the height.
Connor,
really has the height structure of a lightweight. So I just think he's always had that stocky legs, and you know, like that's what made. But that's what made him so good is that athleticism, that strength, that the ability to close distance with such speed with his jab or his takedown. So I just think that's what played in his advantage. So I think the weight cut could really hurt him. But I mean, for that money, dang, I'll make 145 tomorrow if I had to. If you're gonna pay me that Conor money, so. I mean, it's worth it for GSP to make that if he's going to ever do it.
Absolutely. One thing I forgot to mention off the top, Joe, we have two competitors for UFC St. Louis this weekend joining the show. The two competitors that I think really have a lot to prove this weekend. Kamaru Usman, who has run through all the welterweights that have come before him
so far. Call him the Nightmare.
Yeah,
the Nigerian Nightmare.
And he has proven such, and he's a gigantic favorite this weekend against Emil Mech. But, you know, how many more statements does this guy need to make before people start recognizing him and putting him into the top five equation? And then you've got Paige VanZant, who I think has a lot to prove because people doubt Paige VanZant all the time. People act like Paige VanZant is only in the UFC because she's attractive or marketable.
And she has a boyfriend now, too.
Well, so she's less marketable now?
Yeah. So all the guys are all pissed. We're all following her now.
Yeah, exactly.
No, but she's amazing.
Are you speaking for yourself, Joe? Is that what
maybe
you're
I'm single. If she was single, who knows? Yeah. She's a little young, though. She's, what, 23, I think?
Yeah, she's in her early 20s.
Yeah. Okay.
But, that's your cutoff, right, 23?
That's a good age for me, yeah. Young. Yeah. I can help her with her low kicks. Her stand-up will get better. I think it'll be a good matchup.
Yeah, it
could
be a
good relationship.
I mean, you always just ask her to come out here and train. I mean, Oregon is only a four-hour flight.
Then I have to spar with her boyfriend first, but that's what we got to do. The boyfriend issue.
You're trying to establish yourself as the alpha with the boyfriend?
But someone always said, just because there's a goalie, Aaron, doesn't mean you can't score. So we'll see how that goes.
All right. Well, I hope that doesn't come into effect in my personal life.
No, not for you, for me.
With Paige, I mean, she's 4-2 in the UFC. Her losses are to Watterson and to the champion, Rose Namajunas, and those are not losses to be ashamed of.
I mean, what I love about her is how she took the approach of trying to get fans outside of mixed martial arts, and I think that's a really good strategy for fighters these days. I mean, even for me as a kickboxer, it's even a smaller niche than MMA is, but With kickboxing, at least, I did things like fitness shows. I got out to the fitness community because I had to bring other eyes. People who are passionate MMA fans, people who are passionate kickboxing fans, they're going to watch the sport regardless. They're going to watch it, whether it's a good card, whether it's a bad card, whether it's a Friday, whether it's a Saturday. In order to build yourself, it's nice to get new eyes and new attention. And that's what she really did with Dancing in the Stars, Chopped Canada. So I think a lot of fighters need to take that approach to build themselves.
Unless you want to just go on Twitter and say ridiculous things like that. Is it Andrew Tate? What's that kickboxer's name?
Yeah. And it just comes off.
Yeah,
and
just comes on Twitter and says ridiculous stuff. That's probably the wrong way to get attention.
Yeah.
But I know his name. I've never seen him fight. Yeah, so I know his name.
Well, you got Colby Covington making a name for himself.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, I think that's something maybe like we're saying Kamaru Usman.
Colby Covington beat Demian Maia.
Oh, yeah, that too.
Like, I mean, the guy's not just all talk.
But he talked to get that fight, didn't he? He used a lot of his...
A little bit. But listen, you can't undermine the guy's status in the division after he beats Damian Maia. He's got a way better resume than Usman. I'm not sure if he'd beat Usman. I think that would be a great matchup.
But at
the same time, like, you can't deny Colby Covington is a top four.
No. But I'm saying the way he's talking, like,
he's certainly upped his profile
with the Tyquil, with the Tyron Woodley Tyquils to go to bed. And I mean, he's doing what he has to do. Some people love it, some people hate it, but we know who he is now.
Yeah,
and he's doing well
on the map.
Like you said, he's performing. He's backing up the talk. That's what Connor did when he was talking like that. We're like, what the heck's this guy talking? Way too confident. Well, he backs it up.
We'll have to ask Kamaru Usman about him, because last time I interviewed Kamaru, I was at UFC 218, and he said that basically he had signed the contract to fight Covington, but Covington kept not signing it.
Yeah. So, he does commentary too. He's a color commentator. So I want to ask him. I want to talk to him about with my boy Showdown Joe Ferraro. So I mean, I want to ask him about that. See what some of his challenges are with it. What he's enjoying with it.
Yeah, when he posted the video of him and Joe, I said Joe's the only guy who's not ducking Kamaru Usman.
Yeah, there you go.
Joe liked that. While we're on the topic of UFC St. Louis, Duho Choi returns. I'm very excited about that. But the crazy thing about Duho that, it's been talked about a little bit, and I know Ariel Helwani interviewed him this week and mentioned it, that he's coming up on his mandatory military service with South Korea. So that means he'll have to walk away from the sport for 2 years. And
really?
This is a guy that Dana White had mentioned as one of the future stars in the sport. And now if he makes a big statement win over Jeremy Stephens, I'm sure he'll fight again this year. But, I mean, that can really derail your career. I mean, if you look at the Korean Zombie, he fought Jose Aldo, lost for the championship, and then went and did his mandatory duty and was away for 4 years.
Yeah, that's too long, and especially Duho Choi is only 26 years old.
Yeah.
That's a prime that you need to be really competing. That's the age where you need to be putting that grind in the octagon, so that's a bad time, bad timing for him.
Yeah, well, they don't call it mandatory service for no reason. He has to go.
Well, hopefully sometimes, in Thailand, a lot of these fighters are part of the Thai army, but they still box there, they still do things, they're
absolutely
still out to train. So hopefully they offer him and they give him an exception, like what he's going to do for the country. So,
well, speaking of which, Kyung Ho Kang is also on this particular card, and he's returning from military duty. He's been off for about 2 or 3 years.
That's insane.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love that guy, Mr. Perfect.
Yeah,
Kyung Ho Kang.
Yeah, I don't know much about him, but...
Yeah, he's an interesting guy.
Keep an eye on him.
Great scrambler. I think his fight might be on Fight Pass this weekend. I think he's the first fight of the card. But which I don't know if I agree with, because he's a guy that is really exciting, is frequently in exciting fights. But, you still want to get people watching Fight Pass, and putting him on is a good way to do that.
It's not the most impressive record, but 13 wins, 7 losses.
He's one of these guys with a deceptive record, like Mark Hunt. Like, the record doesn't tell the story of how good he is.
Yeah. All right. Well, I'll see him with a name like Mr. Perfect.
He's a 3-1.
What makes him
perfect? 3-1 favorite against
Guido
Canetti.
What's making him perfect? What's making?
We'll see. Yeah, his record certainly is not perfect.
Is he a good technical fighter?
Very good technical fighter.
That's what I like.
Good grappler. Very good submissions. Crafty. Good striker. He's really the total package in terms of his skill set. And I'm really excited to have him back, because he was one of my favorite fighters to watch.
Well, Korea has a long history in martial arts. So, I started with Taekwondo, which is a Korean-based martial arts. So probably a lot of them have that, old school martial arts traditional experience, which gives them that benefit in new martial arts. I genuinely believe it. A lot of these new martial artists who come into the sport, who just started maybe when they were 19, it's different. I think they have a different mentality than someone like myself and all these George St. Pierre's who started when they were so young. It's that different mindset. So, I mean, that's probably where he gets that experience, man, that old school traditional martial arts. I love seeing when guys have that experience. It brings that martial arts aspect to to it instead of that fighting, right?
Mm-hmm. And well, not to diminish what you're just saying, but they also have great nicknames. You've got Stun Gun Dong
Young Kim. Oh, the best, though. Yeah.
The Maestro Dong Young Kim.
Mr. Perfect. Mr. He's Perfect, also, this guy here is the Typhoon, too. Not so Do creative.
The Korean Superboy is fantastic.
Yeah.
And the Korean Zombie, of course, for Chan Sung Jun. Right. Awesome. I love those nicknames. Excellent.
We got to get you to Korea then. We still haven't. We need a nickname for you, Aaron.
Yeah, I can be the Jewish Superboy.
The Jewish Superboy. There we go.
Yeah, there we go. Perfect.
I like it.
Yeah, and if you see me, feel free to address me as that in the future. That's what I'll be going by. Going.
We'll
going
start
forward.
Making your shirts. And we'll start getting cool your walkout shirts.
But, you know, yeah.
We'll
yeah,
take
I'll
it.
Go get a customized shirt.
Yeah, your walkout
shirt. Yeah, let
shirt,
me know
man.
Who makes those Bazooka MMA shirts, or if you get that screen,
the
printer.
Screen printing. Yeah, yeah. Oh yeah, we're gonna we're getting some Jewish Starboy Superboy. What do you want?
The Jewish Superboy.
Superboy. All right, I'm good with it.
So what else do we have to address here? Jeff Nowitzki, he was on Joe Rogan's podcast and said a couple interesting things. First, he said he thinks Nick Diaz wants to fight again, which is interesting.
That.
His name hasn't been in the news much in the past year, but Nick was flagged for a USADA violation for whereabouts, which is if USADA is trying to find you and they can't find you three times in a year, you get suspended, provisionally suspended.
If you follow him on Instagram, he's in Vegas smoking
he's in
weed.
He's in a club smoking weed.
Like, come on. Where's
girls,
Nick Diaz with girls around him smoking weed in Vegas? Come on, guys.
You don't need to fill out your whereabouts policy. Just go on Instagram.
Go on his Instagram, and it's hilarious.
Imagine a guy's walking through like the club with like a little briefcase trying to
see him to get his urine.
Yeah. Excuse me. Have you seen Nick Diaz around?
Yeah. I'm telling you, his whole Instagram is him smoking joints at Vegas clubs. So, I mean, it's not probably hard to find him. But it would be nice to have him back. I mean, it's fun.
Yeah.
Why not? It's fun.
Well, speaking of a fun comeback, John Jones was mentioned in that interview, and Nowitzki said he doesn't think that Jones's fifth test failure indicates intentional use. Now, this is the big problem, I think, with Jones and him potentially coming back sooner rather than later, so to speak. I mean, a lot of people have said he could be suspended 2 to 4 years. Nowitzki actually said it could be as much as 8 years, which is, wow.
Crazy.
But the California State Athletic Commission, when you're filling out your paperwork as a fighter, you have to list on penalty of perjury all of the supplements you've taken during your camp.
Fought for California.
So if he blames
three times.
A supplement that's not on that list.
Worst commission, by the way.
What happens? What, the California State Athletic Commission?
They're just so disorganized
every
time I fought for them.
I've heard great things about
them.
When
I fought for them, they were terrible and disorganized.
Was Andy Foster running it back then?
I can't remember who was
saying it. Andy Foster running it. He's changed everything. He's turned it around.
It was. I freaked out once in my career, and it was the California State. Like I had to make 159 for the first time. They were like 2 hours late. This was just before I signed with Glory, so maybe 2012.
Okay,
maybe,
I'll have to look into who was.
Yeah, I'll give you the exact date, but they were like 2 hours late. You do not get fighters to cut weight and be 2 hours late sitting in a room.
That's
waiting.
A miserable experience.
I lost it. It got to the point where like I'm such a calm, cool guy. I got to the point, and I was fighting a UFC veteran, Mehdi Begdad.
Oh,
so it was a big fight. Fighting Mehdi Begdad, you know, this is my second time fighting Full Rules Muay Thai. 2 hours late, I lost it to him. I was throwing chairs in the weigh-in room. Like, I lost my mind. So since
your mind
then,
wasn't
I was
all there at
so
the time.
Pissed off.
If you're that dehydrated, your mind's not thinking
so
properly.
It was so bad. So since then, I have a bad taste in my mouth for the California State Commission. But hopefully they've gotten better since
then.
Well,
I mean, they've implemented all these different policies that no other commission's doing with Andy Foster, which is they're making sure that everybody's weight is.
Well, they're trying to be leaders
percentage.
In fighter safety, which I appreciate, definitely.
Yeah.
But just not making us wait 2 hours to weigh in.
Yeah.
But again, UFC, they're not waiting 2 hours for this.
The UFC starts at 9 and you have until 11 or you're not fighting.
Yeah. So we'll see. Hopefully they get better. But I do like that what they're doing is trying to get as much safety as they can. I mean, again, people listening obviously understand that my career was shortened with concussions. But I just think they got to start doing more with protecting guys outside of the fighter making that decision. Like if you get knocked out, what is like a 30-day medical suspension? Like sometimes a fighter needs more than that to recover and those kind of things. So hopefully they continue to do things for fighter safety because a lot of fighters won't do it for themselves. Or they're in the mindset of, you know, I'm fine now, and they don't understand the long term. So good on the California State.
Yeah, so that being said, with John Jones, you know, if that goes to a hearing and he says, well, this is why this happened, they look at his paperwork and say, well, you didn't disclose that you were taking this supplement. Like, you know, it's I just think it's going to be tough for John Jones and his team to get him anything less than a 2-year suspension. We'll see. I mean, I'd love to see John Jones back.
It's the constant violations, though, right?
Well, I mean, popping for oral turinabol almost in competition is like, it was after a weigh-in. It's like, wow. Because that's, you know you're going to be tested. Like, you know that day they are going to test you.
Are they trying to make an example of him? Is he the one that they're gonna?
Well,
use
they might
example?
Have to. They might have to. But I mean, I mean, oral turinabol is no joke, right?
Yeah.
Like that being said, they have found traces of oral turinabol in certain supplements.
Like I think they were saying Chinese creatine or something.
There's
like
certain
that?
Ones. There's a list of different ones where there have been instances of oral turinabol found in specific substances.
And this is in even GNCs,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, GNCs.
Like so, I think this says what 20 something products in GNC.
Yeah. So if they find out that it is a supplement that he has disclosed, that it was in there, that it was unintentional use, then, I mean, they still probably have to give him a year for taking a supplement that wasn't on their list of approved substances. But if it was on their list of approved substances, what, you give him 6 months? I don't know.
You know what I wonder,
and
too?
And then 6 months has happened already. You're done.
Like, say for example, how does it work with the suspension stuff? Say you were suspended a year ago for having elevated THC levels.
Yeah.
And you got suspended. And now the rule changes. Will they cancel your suspension?
I'm sure you could appeal it, but I don't think so.
No.
I know that a lot of the Russian athletes in the UFC were tested positive for meldonium.
Which is what?
It's I don't know if it's a performance-enhancing drug. I don't really know. I can't really speak on that. But it was the same thing that Maria Sharapova got caught using and got a 2-year tennis suspension for.
Okay.
I believe it was 2 years. But it got pulled off of, I think, the list, and a lot of the fighters, it either got added or pulled off the list. I can't remember what it was. And a lot of the fighters that tested positive for it were given exemptions. They weren't suspended.
Yeah, because I always wondered that, how they do that. Because, I mean, at one point, Nick Diaz was suspended for marijuana, right?
Yeah.
So now with the elevated changes and all the things that they're doing.
But marijuana use in competition is still banned.
It's still,
like,
yeah.
You still can't use, like,
THC. They up the levels of THC that's legal, but still.
Well, Novitski also said that he's been talking to different commissions about getting rid of that, too, about in-competition marijuana violations.
I mean, I think it would be positive for guys. I mean, especially with stress and anxiety and you know, having trouble sleeping, it could be a good option for guys.
Curtis Blaydes, who was the last guest of 2017 on our show, who's in the co-main event of UFC 221 now against Mark Hunt, he had a win overturned because he had very, very low levels of THC in a state that had like a very strict policy. I think it was the Texas State Athletic Commission.
Well, people need to start understanding it's a natural substance, and if it's going to help people, what people don't understand, even these commissions, if you're a fighter fighting, training all day, every day, you're in camp, you're sparring, the grinding on your body, the grinding on your head, you need something for inflammation. You need something for pain. So that's why I think CBD being legal now and being part of the USADA being not on the banned substances.
And WADA, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's incredible. Like, I mean, it's something that what's happening is all of us fighters end up having to take something for our pain. So they rely on Advils, the Tylenols, Motrins, where they're continually popping all this ibuprofen. They're causing ulcers
or
in their stomach, peeing in their blood. They're trying to take other pills. And that's okay. You know, so I mean, now that there's some natural substances and there's a lot more research on it, like they're even saying with marijuana and CBD, it's helping fighters. The reason why I take it, it helps with inflammation, and it's saying it's protecting neurons in your brain. Hey, as a fighter, don't you want something that protects a neuron in your brain that's natural? So, I mean, hopefully there's more research, and even the UFC encourages the use of CBD. So,
well, we should get to our next guest. As mentioned, he's fighting on UFC St. Louis this Sunday, not Saturday. So programming note if you're going to tune into TSN.
I like that it's on a Sunday.
Yeah, Sundays are better.
Yeah.
Why not?
I can still go out on Saturday night.
Although,
and
if
then
you have to work the next day.
And
if you have to work the next day. Thankfully, they're only doing a 4-fight main card, which means it'll be wrapped by midnight.
Yeah.
Because if it's wrapped by 1 and you're working the next day, it's no bueno.
Yeah,
but,
no bueno.
That'll be TSN 5 this Sunday night at 10 p.m. So after you're done watching all the football games, you can watch the prelims on Fight Pass and the Fight Network in Canada and the main card at 10 p.m. Eastern.
And it's an awesome card, so.
Yeah, absolutely. Especially with the opening fight of the main card, you've got Kamaru Usman, who's someone who has been making a lot of waves at welterweight. A lot of people think he has the potential to be a future champion in the division, and he joins us now on the TSN MMA show.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's time to introduce this week's guest.
Joining us now on the TSN MMA show, it's Kamaru Usman, a man who many feel could be a future champion at welterweight. I'm sure if you ask the man himself, he would agree. Agreed, Kamaru?
Yes, absolutely. I will be the champion soon to come.
Do you have like a timetable?
Of course.
Do you have like a goal? Like I want to be champion by this date, or I want to fight for a championship by this date?
By the end of 2018.
Wow, that you think that soon? I mean, the problem that you have is, you know, and it's something that we've discussed when I've interviewed you in person at events, is that it's hard for people, I guess, that are ranked above you to want to sign up to fight people that are ranked below them, and that seems to be a systemic problem with the UFC rankings.
Absolutely, but you know, this is the thing, is after this fight, I'm no longer going to make the mistake of taking a fight because that's what is offered to me. I won't do that anymore. If these guys can sit here and say, we're not going to fight that guy because he's a hard fight and he's too hard of a fight and he's ranked below me, then why should I continue to say, oh, I'm going to fight this guy that's unranked, but it's a tough guy? I won't do it. I will give the UFC, it's gonna be on the UFC now to make those matchups happen, to make those guys fight me. How am I supposed to move up in the ladder if I can't fight higher-ranked opponents?
Well, last we spoke in Michigan, you told me you'd been offered a fight with Colby Covington. What ended up happening there? You ended up being matched up with Emil Mekhagen.
Yeah, I was offered a fight with Colby Covington, and he turned it down. He said no, he wanted to wait for, he wanted Tyron Woodley. That's what the point where he thought he could get that fight. But unfortunately, Tyron said no. Tyron's undergoing surgery to fix his shoulder. And with that being said, Colby's sitting, is waiting. He's sitting there waiting. And stylistically, it doesn't really make sense for Colby to fight any of the other guys because those guys don't really test him. They're still, I've said before, they're specialists still left in our division. And the last one of the last ones was Damian Maia. Damian Maia is a jiu-jitsu, is a ground specialist. That's the one place he's at the biggest threat. And so Colby tried to pick off those guys, you know, but there's the only guy that's that well-rounded is me. And so that's the fight to make. There's you can't say that I haven't proven it. I was in the rankings before Colby Covington. I'm the only guy that has been in the rankings for almost 2 years now, but has declined in rankings and haven't lost the fight. Has won impressively in each fight. So what sense does that make? Colby Covington fights a guy that's ranked below me, but then jumps in the rankings ahead of me. Darren Till fights one guy, jumps in the rankings ahead of me. Rafael Dos Anjos fights a guy that's ranked below me, but jumps in the rankings ahead of me. That makes absolutely no sense. And then when I ask to fight these guys, they all say no.
Yeah, because they've jumped the line.
Yes. So it sucks, but I believe after this fight, if I don't get I'm going to be looking at a top five fight. I'm not rushing into anything if it doesn't propel me to the spot where I should be at, which is looking in the top five by the end of the year, looking to fight for that title.
Do you feel you need to talk a little bit more to get that? It seems like that's the way guys like Colby's getting it, and you know they're just being a little bit more vocal. Is that something you see doing? Like, I mean, if they give you the mic at the end of this fight, do you plan on calling specific names?
It's not something that I'm not going to go out of character.
Yeah,
you know that. Excuse me, that's not me. I'm not going to go out of my character to try to put on a fake persona, because I don't do this just because I want to be famous and have a bunch of money. Yeah, the money doesn't hurt, but I don't do this because of that. I do this because of competition. I've put in that much time and effort to try to be the best at this, and I want to show that I am the best at it. And so all that talking and all the spectacles and all that, I'm not going to go out of my way to have to do that. But the one thing that I will be vocal about my abilities and the work that I've put in, and which I have been. Look at my last 3-4 fights. I called out Damian Maia with him sitting less than 20 feet away from me, and he turned down. He said no. I called out Dong Young Kim. That fight never happened. I called out Neil Magny. Didn't happen. I called out RDA. It didn't happen. Yeah. It's not that these guys don't know who I am. They know who I am. But they're just like, I'll take an easier fight that's going to actually help me propel me rather than lose into a guy that's going to just kill my momentum.
So do you think there's a systemic problem here with the rankings? Like, if Do you think that if a guy turns down a fight, it should become public information so that people that are doing the rankings are more educated on what they're looking at in terms of the big picture
Absolutely.
Of things?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And this is the problem with that is for guys to turn down fights the issue with there's nothing wrong with turning down a fight. There's nothing wrong with me, someone like myself, saying no to Emil Mech. Like, do you agree? That makes sense. Why would I fight a guy that 1-0 in the U.S., has one fight in the UFC, not ranked in the top 15, not even top 20? Like, why would I do that? That makes no sense. I'm on a win streak. I want to continue to climb, and I want to get to the title. So why should I fight Mech? That makes sense for me to say no to that fight. But what doesn't make sense is when a guy is coming off of two losses, there's certain guys in division or you're coming off of a loss, and then they ask you to fight this guy, and you're saying no because it's a hard fight. I don't want to take another loss. And you're trying to systematically find a fight that's going to build you back up to that top. That's what needs to stop, and that's what needs to be public information.
So I got a question for you. Now that you do like commentary as well, that's what I do. I'm a color commentator for Glory Kickboxing, and you actually work with one of my boys, Showdown Joe.
Yeah, Showdown Joe's a man.
How does it change, man? Like, because for me now, like again, I was actively competing, stepped out to do the color side, but I've changed my mindset a little bit, seeing the production side and the entertainment value in things and calling fights. Has that changed the direction you kind of look at your career a bit?
In a sense, a little bit, yes, it does. Because, as you mentioned, now you get to see the production side of things.
Yeah.
To see how things come together. When you're just fighting, you don't get to see that. You're there focused on that goal. If that's your opponent, you're there to wrap up, go in there and fight, and that's it. But now being able to see the back end of it, see the production side, you see what they want as well and what they need from you for them to do their job better. And so, yeah, it does help a little bit.
Yeah, because even with me, I'd never say anything on the mic. I'm like you. I wanted my skill to talk, everything. But now when sitting on the production side, when I see guys get the mic and they're saying things like, you know, I'll fight anyone the UFC wants to, or the Glory wants to put in front of me. I'm like, man, that's your time. You got to build yourself. You got to promote yourself. You know, this is the opportunity. So I've seen sides where it's like, I got to jump on these opportunities more. I should have, you know, it's late now, but those kind of opportunities I should have taken advantage more of.
Yeah, absolutely. And it makes those things like that more apparent to you. And I understand that more. And as I mentioned, if you go back and look at my last three fights, I've been vocal. It's not that I've been silent. I've been vocal, which is why I do get the little notoriety that I get. Is because that I am being vocal. I am calling out these guys, but these guys are saying no to me. So it's not a lack of me not wanting to fight or me not wanting to talk. I want the tough guys. I want to move up that ladder. But it's a matter of them saying no to me after I've called them out. That's the issue here. But, yeah, I think, you know, being on the production side, then you get to see how you can maximize that opportunity and what that does for you and in your career. As far as helping that out. So, yeah, I love being on that side of it as well. I have a great partner that kind of helps carry me, Showdown Joe, and helps prepare me for something which I hope I have a future in after my professional career.
What are you finding as some of the challenges doing it? What's your biggest challenge with it?
What's the biggest challenge is at the end of the day, it's learning how to perform. When you're on the hot seat as well.
Yeah. I find the opens are pretty tough. When the camera's on and you got to perform, I find the opens are one of the hardest.
Exactly. Which is, you know, of course, as a fighter, I've worked on getting better at that aspect of it because you train in the gym all day. You can be a killer in the gym.
Yep.
But then you see those guys when they step out there to perform in front of thousands of fans, they can't do it. And so, you know, vice versa, the same thing on the production side. You can be great at practicing in front of people or just, you know, in your house. But once that – it's something that camera does. Once that camera is in your face, it's like it neutralizes your brain and what
– Yeah, you get
you
froze.
Were thinking of what you want.
I used to memorize everything, man. And I was like, what am I doing, man? Because I was so nervous. But now it's cool now.
Exactly.
It's been 2 years for me, so.
Yeah, my first couple of times I tried to do that, memorize, like, the open to the show.
Yeah,
what I wanted to say about the guys, But, you know, the best thing is to do your research.
I've learned
to do your research and then just let it flow. Get comfortable and just let it flow. And that's working the best so far for me.
Yeah, just being yourself, man. That's the first thing they said. Don't be a commentator. Just be yourself. And that was a big help for me.
Absolutely.
All right, Kamaru. Well, we have to wrap it up. Unfortunately, we're out of time with you here. One last thing. How many Usmans are we going to see in the UFC by the end of this year?
How many what?
Usmans. I heard there's a heavyweight on the horizon that we might see in the UFC by the end of the year.
I don't know if by the end of the year, but, you know, that depends on his transition and God willing, how he prepares and how he excels. Because you can't put a time on how fast or how slow someone can pick up the sport. You know, I want to make sure that he is ready for everything when he gets in there. Because this is not one and done. This is for the takeover for as long as he wants to reign. And so he needs to be prepared on all levels. So when he steps in there, you can't throw anything at him that he hasn't seen and he has not been prepared for. So we're going to take our time to make sure that we're ready for that. But, man, you've already seen what kind of a freak athlete he is. And, you know, the Usman name is going to ring long, a long time.
I'm, of course, referring to your brother Muhammad, 3-0 in Touchy Palace in 2017. And hopefully we do get to see him compete in the UFC sooner rather than later. Thanks for your time, Kamaru. Good luck this weekend against Emil Mech in St. Louis.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
That was Kamaru Usman joining us on the show. And, again, a very intriguing athlete who I think has the potential to be a champion at welterweight. I said some people think he has that potential. I'm one of those people. You know, after season of The Ultimate Fighter, where it was Black Zillions versus American Top Team, Faraz Zahabi was here, I think with Rory McDonald, he was at TSN. And I said to Faraz, I said, did you watch the last season of The Ultimate Fighter? He goes, no, I didn't see it. I go, this guy Kamaru Usman reminds me of GSP. So I said to him, I go, he reminds me a lot of GSP. He's, you know, he uses really good MMA wrestling, improving striking. And he was like, oh, I'll have to check it out. But that was right after the show, and I just had a feeling about Usman. He was just head and shoulders above everybody else on the show. You could tell from watching it. He was running through everybody.
But he's a nice, polite, quieter guy. So, I mean, that's where it comes down to him he's coming out
year,
a little bit more.
Yeah, because the guys aren't fighting him.
That's like, it. You have to sell yourself. And I think that's where he's on the right track.
I'm interested in seeing how his brother does. His brother, Muhammad Usman, fought three times this year at heavyweight, 3-0. Former football player.
UFC?
Yeah, well, hopefully he'll be in the UFC this year. We asked him about that earlier, so we'll see what happens.
All right.
Yeah. So we've got UFC St. Louis. Great card. I think a great way to kick off the year with a Doo Ho Choi in the main event. I'm always a big fan of watching him, and he's got no easy task. You know, tough task for him. Jeremy Stephens, a guy who's been on a roll at 145.
Yeah, what makes Jeremy Stephens so fun to watch is that punching power. Yeah. And, I mean, that's why you can't count him out in this fight. He's I believe he's a slight underdog. But that punching power, I actually think that's if I'm going with some underdogs picking this week, I might be going Jeremy Stephens. I think that punching power, and Doo Ho Choi likes to get into those fun fights and scraps, so I think Jeremy Stephens got a good chance in this fight.
There aren't a lot of very attractive underdogs on this card, but as you mentioned, Stephens has a shot. I mean, if this becomes a firefight and Stephens hits him with a shot, he could go down.
I think so. I think that's the fight Doo Ho Choi is going to bring.
Yeah.
You know, so I think Stephens, if he stays patient, looks for that big counter punch, I think he's got a really good chance in taking this one.
And you never know, a war like the one he had against Cub Stephens, followed by an
that was fight of the year, wasn't it?
Year. Yeah, it was fight Cubs of the Swanson. Year. Yeah, you know, and you can watch that now on YouTube. The UFC's released it.
Yeah, got an email about that.
Yeah, you're going to want to watch that fight as many times as you can.
Absolutely.
Especially if you haven't seen it, then, you know, you can shut the show off. I give you full permission. Pause the show. Go on YouTube and look up Doo Ho Choi and Cubs Swanson. But if you're listening to the show, there's a good chance that you've seen it. So Doo Ho Choi, I think, is just an explosive athlete that's just incredibly technical, but also isn't afraid to get into a firefight. It's just a very fun main event.
Yeah, I agree. I was actually surprised, based on the other names on the card, that got the main event. I mean, I even thought the co-main event, which Uriah Hall versus Vitor Belfort, could have easily been the main event.
And even Paige VanZant, Jessica Rose Clark. It's Paige's debut at flyweight. She's very marketable. People know her name.
Yeah, see, so I thought that could have been a nice head on the prelim card, the Paige VanZant. And then I would have liked to see even Michael Johnson and Darren Elkins move to maybe the co-main event.
Yeah. Yeah, that fight is going to be a great fight. And I think they like to have that as the headliner for the prelim card because, you know, it gets you kind of ready for that main card.
Oh, that's a scrap.
And that's, yeah, it'll be a scrap. And it'll also be interesting to see how Michael Johnson does it, 145 pounds. I think that
you were saying there might be possible weight issues.
Well, he had mentioned in an interview prior to this event leading up to it that he hadn't done a test cut.
Yeah.
And if you're not going to do a test cut, you know, you're cutting an extra 10 pounds. And he was a pretty big lightweight to begin with. But he's fighting in his hometown of St. Louis. I'm sure he doesn't want to disappoint people. I can't remember if he's missed weight before. I think he's missed weight at lightweight before, but I might be wrong. I'll have to look that up.
Yeah, but even when, like, see, it's always that pressure to want to make that lower weight. And you'll make the fight before, you'll step on the scale and you'll make your weight easy. Like, oh, I can go another 10 pounds. But then in reality, man, that 10 pounds is going to be a tough 10 pounds. So hopefully he did his due diligence and did all that work beforehand. Because if you're trying to cut that extra weight last minute, man, that's going to really affect your performance.
Look at Anthony Pettis. He was supposed to fight for the title at 145 and he couldn't get those last 3 pounds off.
Yeah.
And he's a pretty small.
It's a game of, you know, ounces basically. At that point, it's all very little. I mean, even your underwear sometimes have to come off in order to make that weight where you can't even cut that much weight. Yeah, like, man, in that situation, you would cut your hair. Like, even me, how much I love my hair, like, I would shave my head.
I wouldn't do that, Joe.
No. Hey, to make weight and not have to go back in the sauna, you're shaving anything you can.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
Yeah, if you have 3 pounds to cut, you're not cutting your hair.
We should do a test run with you.
With me? Yeah. I could get down to like 135, I think.
Let's try it.
I'd have to starve myself. I could get
we'll
down.
Do it. Just do a 24-hour cut.
I think I could probably
cut?
Get down to 125 if I really had to.
I say we try it.
No, I don't. I don't want to do it.
No?
No, I'm not.
You're never curious to try?
No.
No? It's not one of those things like...
I'll explain to you why. Let me explain to you why. So,
it's a good mental challenge.
As we mentioned earlier in the show, I am the Jewish Superboy.
Yeah.
And I have to do... I fast once a year.
Which
I
is
fast
good.
From like 6
intermittent fasting's healthy.
6 p.m. to 7 p.m., no water. 6 p.m. the day before, 7 p.m. the next day, no water.
Okay.
And I feel like absolute trash.
Now you have to go in the sauna. You'll be fine.
Yeah. And then on top of that, I'd have to go in the sauna to cut the weight. I just think
And
it
then we'll
dangerous.
Set you up with a nice fighter. Like someone from my gym, maybe. We'll get a good sparring match.
Yeah. Yeah.
Why
I'll just
not?
Start hitting the bags.
I think it'd be good. I think it'd be fun. This would be something we could talk about. It'd be like a podcast
only if I don't have
experiment.
If I don't have to sign a waiver and I can hold Bazooka Kickboxing liable, then we'll see.
A podcast experience. Yeah. I mean, I'm sure a lot of people listening
You'll
have
just
never
interview
cut
me
weight.
As I get closer and closer to the weight and I sound worse and worse.
We'll do it. We'll see how it goes.
Well, Johnny Hendricks challenged people to cut. He goes, I want to see you guys cut the weight.
And see how it feels.
My friends at Flow Combat did it. My friends Dwayne Finley and Hunter Holmes.
Yeah, I don't think it's bad. Why not?
Yeah, my colleagues in the MMA media, so good for them for doing it.
Yeah, you're trying to push the topic away now. You're trying to change the subject.
Well, I can get down to 145 probably today. But,
well, you'd have to cut that muffin you just ate.
Yeah,
so no muffins.
Yeah,
no muffins. Yeah, all out.
I could just eat a bunch of salad, though, couldn't I?
Like if I just ate salad, a little bit more than that.
Yeah.
Not enough nutrition in lettuce for you.
Yeah, I wouldn't have to fast, I guess, to cut down, right?
You can do it smart.
Yeah, maybe, you know what, maybe I will. Maybe
I'll
try it out.
Yeah,
let's get Elias in here. Elias is like the master of cutting weight.
He can cut weight, yeah.
Elias cuts from like 220 to 185.
Yeah, oh yeah. My guy who fights for glory, now ranked 4 in the world, Rob Thomas, he's a middleweight too. I'm trying to get him to do some sparring with Elias. We've connected Elias, and I'm trying to get more work between the two of them. But my guy Rob's now 215, and he cuts to 180, 187, 185. Yeah, glory's 187.
Yeah.
But yeah, he's walking around 215.
Okay, so what's that? Yeah. That's 40 pounds almost? Yeah, it's a lot.
It's a lot of weight.
That's a lot of weight. If I cut 40 pounds,
no,
I would 30 be a,
pounds,
I'd be
30
a skeleton.
Pounds, 30 pounds.
30, no, it's 40, isn't it? 250, 175 to 250.
No, it's 185. The division's
185, right.
Yeah, middleweight.
I was thinking 176.
Yeah. No, 187.
30 pounds, yeah.
So, yeah, it's crazy. So, I mean, I did about 25 to 30. It's not as much as you think, but when you're at that weight, you're bloated, your sodium. In a week, you cut, you know, all that sodium and water out. There's 5 pounds in the first week, right?
Yeah.
So, it's not as bad as people think, but you have to do your homework.
Well, I should see what I weigh now. I haven't weighed myself in a while. I think I'd probably in, like, the 148 area code, so I could probably get down to 135.
So, when you're training, what's your specialty?
When I'm training?
Are you better with kicking, punching,
yeah,
when you do your martial arts?
Kicking and punching probably. Yeah, it's
what would be your more your specialty though? You better with kicks or boxing?
Probably kicks.
Yeah,
I got a decent roundhouse kick.
Nice spin kicks. Can you go spin kicks?
Yeah, I can do 360 kick. Yeah,
beautiful.
Yeah,
Yeah, we got to do it. You still haven't come to Bazooka. I'm a little offended, Aaron.
Yeah, all right.
You have a Bazooka sweater now?
Yeah, one day.
Have you
I just
your...
roll in with my Bazooka sweater like I own, like I own the
training.
Place.
Yeah. I had Robin Black in. He trained at Bazooka with us. So
that's true.
You're up.
Yeah.
You're up.
But I'm not sparring with anybody, though. They'll kill me.
That's okay. You don't know that yet.
Yeah, yeah.
Throw some spinning round kicks. We'll see.
Yeah,
we haven't seen it yet, so I don't
know. We'll see how it goes.
Yeah.
Probably won't. But let's move on to the rest of the card. So Paige VanZant, Jessica Rose Clark. Again, I think this is a good spot for Paige to show that she is a top five flyweight in the world.
Agreed.
I don't think that there's a whole lot of competition at flyweight right now, and I think she can do that. She can establish herself as a contender with a win here. Uriah Hall, Vitor Belfort, according to my friend Jim Edwards of MMA NYTT, Vitor is going to be retiring after this fight, apparently. I mean, I know he's bounced the idea around before, but if that's the case, then I tend to lean with people that say they're not retiring. Like, when people say I'm retiring, I feel like they have less... I mean, you know, you want to go out with a big performance, but I don't know. I feel like the cards are stacked against you, especially if you're against a young, hungry guy like Uriah Hall, who's not that young anymore, I guess.
Yeah, well, the benefit is they're both going to stand, which is nice. Both of them aren't, you know, really haven't had a career of jujitsu and wrestling. So at least they're both going to stand, but they have Uriah Hall at such a big favorite. I mean, I got to give Belfort a little bit more credit and more of a chance. I think the odds are right here, but
Uriah, I think, is minus 325.
Yeah, that's huge.
Yeah.
So I don't think it's that much of a gap of a difference based on the way Uriah Hall is never really consistent. Like, I mean, there's times where he'll go in and he'll look terrible and then get a last second knockout, you know, and he'll surprise you. But I haven't really seen a full consistent. I wouldn't be surprised Belfort pull out a nice decision to knock out Hall. I don't really see it, but I see a good decision if he's going to pull it out. And it's just, for me, Belfort was my guy. And it's crazy to see how long he's been in the sport and how well he's been doing. TRT or not, man, the guy has had such a long, I would have to say one of the longest, most successful careers in MMA.
Absolutely. He'll be in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah. Like, I mean, when did we see him? I think he was Ultimate Brazil was maybe his first one, knocking out Vanderlei Silva. That was one of my best fights. And I could probably say I've had two... I've been a fan of two guys in MMA. I'm not really like a guy who watches, like, I'm a fan of this guy, I'm a fan of this guy. But the two guys I would have to pick as my from a young age was Belfort and Robbie Lawler. Those are the two I did. So, I mean, I've seen Robbie Lawler and Belfort for so long. But, yeah, I want Belfort to go out on top, though. I'd like to see my guy go out on top.
Yeah, well, we'll have to see. I mean, Belfort, you know, before they started really cutting down on TRT, was a different fighter.
Yeah.
Knocking out Luke Rockhold, knocking out Bisping, you know. It's tough because he basically sidetracked Bisping to a point where he probably was never going to get a shot at the title, and he happened to fall into one because of an injury. But I don't know. I'm not sure what to think about Belfort. I know that when he was at the top of his game, he was a destroyer.
Oh, yeah. Like,
but now,
a young Belfort? Like, I mean, when he came into Brazil, he was 19, I think.
He's older, and I don't know. Yeah. I just don't know how much he has left to give.
But do you feel Hall should be that high of a favorite?
Probably.
Yeah?
Yeah, I do.
Okay.
But we'll see. I don't know if Belfort's going to be your pick. We'll get to that a little bit later.
I don't know.
Elkins, Michael Johnson, as you mentioned, a great fight. Another one to watch, as you mentioned earlier, I think Kyung Ho Kang versus Guido Canetti is going to be a fun fight.
Yeah, I don't know much about them, but I'm a big follower. James Krause. That's one of my guys. We connect a lot on social media, a lot of mutual friends, and yeah, I'm cheering on James Krause.
Yeah, James is another guy that does analysis
the Fox.
Yeah. Invicta, isn't it?
I don't think so.
I think he does the in-cage stuff for Invicta. I might be wrong.
Okay. Well, not that I know, but I know James, they brought him in on the Fox desk. So now he's doing some of that recently. He actually did it with Todd Grisham, you know, my commentator partner. But yeah, James is good. Young stud, very talented. I like to see him
looking. I don't know how young he is, but he looks very young.
Yeah, that's true too. But I mean,
he's
very
looking guy.
The way he does it is what I really attracted to him. He messaged me randomly on Instagram. I sent him Bazooka shirts. We keep in touch. You know, his teammate and mine, they have Kickboxers in Glory, so we kept in touch. And just he's a smart guy with money. He's a family guy, which I like to see. He's got kids. He's opened up a gym called, I think, Glory MMA. So he's got, you know, he's doing a lot of things with the martial arts community. Good soul, good person. So yeah, I'm rooting for people like that. So.
Absolutely. All right. So let's go to our picks. Let's get a recap for before UFC 219. You were at $85.50. and your parlay of Carlos Condit and Khabib lost, so you're down to 74.50. And I got lucky. I picked Carla Esparza at plus 265, so I went from $79 to $105.05.
That's a nice win for you.
50 cents, yeah.
I got to catch up. I'm confident this week, though. I feel good.
So I want to hear who you've got.
Oh, why do I get to go first?
Let me go first? Well, yeah. I mean, I might have to change my pick if we have the same one, unfortunately, on the fly. But go ahead.
Let's go first. I'm going to go with I'm going to go with James Krause because he's my guy. Do I want to go with the main? I'm going
to
go.
The line
with,
on him has dropped, actually. It was at minus 200 at open, and now it's down to minus 160.
Okay. I'm going to still go with James. My guy can't go against
him. Better value, yeah.
I'm going to go with where's the other pick? I'm going to go with Michael Johnson if the fight happens.
Parlay both of them?
Yep.
Okay, interesting. All right.
Yep.
So that'll be like plus 150 around there.
Yeah, I'm good with it. That's what I wanted. Yeah. I'm confident with Michael Johnson.
All right. Good. Cool. I'm going to go with Paige VanZant at even money. I think that Paige is I think she's gotten to a point where people think she's overrated, and it's gotten to a point where she might be underrated. And we'll talk to her about that later on in the show. But with Paige, you know, getting her at even money is where she opened at nearly a 2-1 favorite. It seems like the public don't really think that she's that good, and I think she is. I think that she's had some missteps against Waterson and Rose Namajunas, who I think were better competition than her. Than her at the time, they were better fighters than her at the time. But when you see people that are young in the sport, that are in their early 20s, the progression seems to happen more and more. They seem to get better and better as long as they're going, as long as they're committed, as long as they're working as hard. So I think that that she's got a good shot against Jessica Rose Clark.
Absolutely. That's a good pick. That's a very good pick.
Yeah. So we'll go with that.
I get suckered because I go with guys that I like, my guys. So I rely on James Krause. Come on, James. Don't let me down. Aaron's right. taking the lead. I'm going to message him.
You got two guys that you can't let you down.
Yeah, I like Michael Johnson. The way I like Michael, reason I'm picking him, I know Darren Elkins is a tough guy, is very durable, but Michael Johnson always comes to fight. I think Darren Elkins is that guy who comes to fight too. But Darren Elkins has been a little bit more wars. He's been hit a little bit more. I actually cornered Antonio Carvalho to fight. I was in the corner with Antonio when he fought Darren Elkins. That was Antonio Carvalho's last fight in the UFC.
That was a controversial decision.
It was a controversial decision because I remember Antonio came out really well and everything that we've been training, everything worked out perfectly. And then Darren Elkins hit him with a nice straight punch, and Tony had a flash knockdown. His knee popped but came back up. And then I think it was, what was the referee at the time? The French referee.
Oh, it wasn't a controversial decision. It was a controversial finish.
It's a controversial, yes. Yeah. Yves Levine, that's right. So yeah. Yves Levine called it off. It was a flash knock. Antonio came up and he was fine.
Yeah.
Even Dana White, when we were in the back in the change room, Dana White came in the back and says, "Hey, don't worry, Antonio. Everything's going to be fine. We'll get you another fight." And then he just got cut, which was so unfortunate because, man, I felt like Antonio could have been just a tear in the featherweight division.
Well, he was one of the best featherweights outside the UFC and WEC for a long time.
Well, not WEC. He never really fought in WEC. No, it was more Japan.
Outside of the
WEC. He was ranked, when we had him on here, he was ranked number two in the world. Yeah. I think it was between him and Uriah Faber back in the day as the top two in the world.
He was like the guy outside of the UFC.
He was the guy. If the UFC opened the featherweight division earlier, we would have seen Antonio in the top three in the UFC, possible, in my eyes, title contender.
Yeah.
I mean, his striking was amazing. He's fought some of the top strikers in Japan. He beat some of the Romino Sato in Japan. So, I mean, he's fought some names. I think I wish that division opened earlier for Antonio.
Friend of the program.
Yeah. Darren Elkins, man, like tough. I mean, I think he got called back for the comeback of the year. I think he got with his one of his fights.
Yeah,
or that, he was nominated anyways.
Yeah, against Bektik. That was for sure the comeback of the year. He was done.
Yeah.
So, going into the third round, the odds on him were he was like 14-1 underdog going into the third round.
So that's where Johnson's going to dominate in probably the first two rounds. And if Elkins could take the third, no problem with that durability, but we'll see.
Stipe Miocic versus Francis Ngannou is next week. Very excited for that. We were talking about this before the show. It's like, we know that Stipe has more tools than Ngannou. He's definitely got better wrestling, as far as we know. Better technical striking, better footwork, probably the faster guy. But Francis just has that one-punch power that you just, in heavyweight, you can't underestimate. Like, in other divisions, like, you know, if Conor was fighting Khabib, like, Khabib probably has a better chance of beating Conor because his wrestling is so sharp that even if Conor lands on him, like he might be able to recover. If Ngannou hits you with that shot, you are done.
You're done. Like, yeah, the way I look at it is that Mike Tyson line. Everyone has a plan until you get hit. So, yeah. I mean, I'm sure Stipe has this huge plan, which, again, he has so many different tools, but that one punch is all that matters. So I think it's going to be a slower fight than we most expect, because Stipe's not – well, he might. I mean, Stipe might just rush in right away, which is a good strategy as well. But staying on the outside and try to pick in and out, try to play and find the right moment will probably be a better strategy.
Yeah.
He's not just going to rush in. So I don't know, man.
And Francis has beaten chinny guys. Like, let's not get it twisted. Overeem is one of the top guys in the division. And the reason for that is because he's been able to be elusive and not get hit. But he got hit, he's been knocked out, I think, a total of 16 times if you combine his kickboxing and MMA. I don't know if that's the exact number.
15 or 16,
And then you look at Arlovsky, who was recently broke a 5-fight losing streak. He's a guy that's been chinny over the years. And as you get older, your chin doesn't improve.
Yeah.
And, of course, he wasn't able to get Curtis Blaydes out, even though Blaydes was barely training at the time. There was a doctor stoppage because his eye was closed, but he didn't knock him out or anything. And then he knocked out a lot of lower-level competition. So you're looking at a guy like Stipe, who's only been finished once, I believe, and that was against Stefan Struve, who probably will have a much better chin than these other guys.
Yeah, I don't know. I think I'm leaning towards Stipe. I mean, I just think what's happening is like very classic of Ngannou getting all of the promotional hype. Ngannou's training full-time at the UFC Institute, which...
He's back in France now.
I mean, majority of his camp there was all there. So the UFC's seeing him, they're training him, they're putting him through all this. His story is incredible, being homeless in France.
Here's my question to you, though, about that with Francis. Is that not the right move? Like, is the right move not to just push Ngannou like crazy? Because then if Stipe beats him, it's like, wow, Stipe beat this guy that's been hyped up. Stipe's the real deal. He's broken the record for heavyweight. He's got three defenses in a row. That's how you make Stipe bigger. By pushing Ngannou and making him this fearsome creature.
But now what happens to, what would you say happens now if Stipe beats Ngannou? What happens to Ngannou's stocks?
Well, I mean,
do you think he'll still be up there as a contender, or do we forget about him?
I think this Miocic-Ngannou fight could be like a trilogy at some point. Because, I mean, who's going to beat Ngannou outside of, I mean, maybe Blaydes could if they rematched. But if Miocic beats Ngannou or vice versa, like, the next best guy is the loser of this fight for the most part, right?
What about Verdum versus Ngannou? Can he get inside, wrestle him down?
Yeah, that's a possibility. That would be a good fight.
Interesting,
I'd be interested in that, for sure. Yeah.
I mean, we'll see. It's just the opposite styles. But I think anyone Ngannou's going to fight is going to be fun to watch regardless. Yeah. But, I like Miocic in it.
Yeah.
I mean, he's proved us wrong every single time as well. So, I mean, you can't go against that.
Yeah,
the five rounds is an issue.
This is the best heavyweight fight that there's ever been in the UFC, I think.
Easily.
I mean, Cain versus Dos Santos was a fantastic fight. That trilogy was excellent.
Well, I mean, Brock Lesnar's fights were pretty epic and big.
But in terms of, like, the skill level, this is a really, really good fight. And I think that, I'm curious to see what it looks like 1 week from now as we're getting really close to the event, like if the hype is built. Because this is a quick turnaround for Ngannou. And you don't have that much time to build him. But that being said... and people make this argument, it's such a quick turnaround, you don't have enough time to build this up. It's like, well, these fights get built up week of. Yeah. It's the week of the fight is when you really start to buy
it. Because there's a fight every week. They don't have time to promote it from so long. But I think they did a good job promoting early for this one.
Yeah.
But I mean, Ngannou's a heavyweight, doesn't have to cut weight. But I actually think he cuts weight to make 265, doesn't he? I'm pretty sure he has to cut a little bit.
Yeah. He was 262 at the last weigh-in, and before that was the heaviest he's ever weighed in. But I think he does have to cut a little bit.
A little bit for it. So, I mean, he doesn't cut much. He didn't really get hit in that shot.
Yeah, Stipe walks around like 235, 240.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. But I think that size could play, like that smaller size. I mean, you're looking at one-punch power Ngannou where Stipe is going to go in and probably put 3-4 punches together on the inside. Good work, the body. I think inside elbows against Ngannou, try to split him open in the clinch with some elbows. I think it's just going to be a good strategy. Just nice and close, inside elbows, try to split Ngannou with some good elbows and then just go for takedown. And just a lot of clinch work. Clinch, get his arms tired, grab him, wrestle him standing,
If you can take him down.
Yeah,
we haven't really seen him. We haven't really seen him get
tested. But I see elbows, man. If Stipe's working some good elbows on the inside, there can be some good damage, which I think is the shot. You have to capitalize on being on the inside.
Yeah, that's a fight to look forward
to.
I'm
pumped.
For sure.
But even the co-main event on that card is not even getting talked about. You know, you're talking
Volkan and Cormier.
No one's even talking about that.
Well, I mean, from what we've seen, I still don't know what Volkan Ozdemir is at this point because he's just knocking guys out in seconds.
Yeah.
So, I mean, he's an exciting...
What do they call it? No time.
So, I mean, if he's able to get Cormier out of there, we're looking at like a new star. Like, if he knocks Cormier out...
Do you think there's a potential?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, we're talking about big guys here.
DC taking easy.
Well, I mean, DC's also... But he was...
Older
even
now.
Even though that fight's been overturned or made into a no contest, like, he did get knocked out by John Jones in his last fight.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. That kind of thing affects you.
For sure.
So, and not to mention that in this camp... You know, Kane is training a little bit more, but he's still probably battling an injury. Rockhold isn't training there right now. He's over at Combat Club. Like, I don't know. You know, there's a lot of little things that play into it. Not to mention that Ozdemir also trains at Combat Club.
Yeah, there was a lot of talk. I don't know who was it. They were talking about how Luke Rockhold is basically in the middle of it.
Yeah.
Because Luke Rockhold's trained with DC at American Top Team for so long.
AKA.
AKA
American Kickboxing.
Oh, American. Okay. Yeah, yeah. What did I say?
He's at American Top.
American Top Team, okay.
Which is also in Florida with Combat Club.
Okay, yeah. So AKA. So he was there, and then they moved over to Henry
Rockhold,
Booth.
Yeah, Rockhold's out.
So Rockhold's trained with both guys. So what's Rockhold telling the guys? You know, who knows?
Well, probably nothing. I think he's a respectful guy. I would hope so. Who knows?
But even not, who cares? I'm sure whatever he decides, I mean, I'm sure both guys would ask.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure. But I don't know. Like, Volkan, like, I just haven't seen... enough of his game, I feel. Like,
Can he defend a takedown?
We saw him get a split decision win over Ovince St. Preux in a pretty uneventful fight. And then you saw him just knock two guys out within a minute.
Yeah.
Or 2 minutes or whatever it was.
Was it Manoa and Sirkunov, right?
Yeah. So if you look at that, that's what, you know, if he has that kind of power and he connects, like, he can win that fight.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I understand why Cormier is a big favorite, and I think he should be a big favorite.
It's all wrestling-based, I think. Yeah. I mean, but Ozdemir's got that nasty uppercut coming in. It can happen. I just think DC is pretty tough, pretty durable.
Now, the question is, how do you market a guy like Ozdemir? Yeah. I mean, like, that's...
Well, they were saying, because, you know, it's not very often that a champ calls you out, you know? Yeah. DC came out on Twitter and said, you're next, Volkan.
Yeah. Well, so, he came out and said... He asked the fans who they want to see him fight next.
And they all said,
I guess the majority said Ozdemir. I thought Gustafsson was the fight to make, but Gustafsson just had surgery, so...
A lot of guys are going through surgery, eh? Yeah. A lot of shoulder injuries, it seems, lately.
Yeah, Demetrius Johnson, for example,
had
a procedure done for inflammation in his shoulders. It says he'll return soon, but I personally thought that fight was going to be made for March, was him versus Dillashaw. And at this point in time, I don't think that's going to be the case anymore.
No. So does that mean Dillashaw defends?
No, I don't think so. I think Dillashaw will wait for that fight. Dillashaw just had a kid. I'm sure the more time he gets to spend with his kid, the better.
Yeah. All right.
So we'll see. Bellator, they don't renew the contract of Jimmy Smith, and I think that's a big mistake.
You like Jimmy Smith?
I think Jimmy Smith is the best color commentator potentially in all of combat sports. I really do.
Maybe not
combat sports, because I don't want to judge
him. You would rate him higher than Joe Rogan?
I'd say all of MMA, because when I say combat sports, I don't watch enough boxing.
Put him higher than Joe Rogan
He's up there with Rogan, if not better than Rogan. Yeah. Of course, hiring Big John McCarthy is also a blow to the sport, because now he's not going to be reffing anymore. And I think he's the most consistent ref and the gold standard of referees in MMA.
Well, hopefully he stays part of, maybe he does something more with educating, newer referees. Because, I mean,
I think he's still going to do his seminars for referees. But at the same time, you like to have, there's a big difference between training guys and actually reffing fights.
Yeah, we'll see how he does. I mean, I've talked to him. He's a friend of mine.
The wealth of knowledge he brings is.
But who
superb.
Has seen probably more fights than Big John?
Nobody.
Probably no one.
Yeah, nobody. So nobody have a lot
has.
Of points of reference.
Like, I mean, even a commentator like, Jimmy Smith, he'll watch a card and he watches fight, but every weekend, Big John's.
Yeah, he's somewhere.
Whether it's. But people don't understand this. He's not just with the UFC. You'll go to a Muay Thai event.
Yeah, yeah.
And all of a sudden, Big John's the referee in a Muay Thai event in Vegas. Dan Mergliotta does glory fights. He does UFC fights. He does local amateur fights. So these guys are working every weekend, different areas in the city. So, I mean, these big refs get a lot of, travel, a lot of work. They put the time in.
I like that ref in glory. The guy goes, no. What's that guy with the beard? Or the long hair?
Paul Nichols?
I don't know. I haven't seen a picture of him.
Okay. No.
he always refs the overseas, the ones in the Netherlands and stuff.
Okay, it could be.
He breaks guys up, he's like, no, break.
Oh, who are you talking? The black guy?
No.
Okay.
No. You have to show me a picture of him.
Okay.
I'll find the picture of the guy.
Okay.
But I just think not having Big John as a ref is tough. But I'm hoping the UFC hires Jimmy Smith because I think Jimmy Smith is phenomenal.
I don't know if it'd be interesting. I think he's I like him. I think he's good. I think he's very knowledgeable. To me, I don't know. I'm indifferent with him. I wouldn't say he's the best, but I'm not going to say he's the worst. But yeah. I mean, it's just indifferent to me. I think he's good. I think he's talented. He's put the time in the sport.
He's not the biggest name, but I just think in terms of presentation and delivery, he's really good.
But I see him more as in my eyes, more of a play-by-play guy, more than a color commentator. I know he has experience in I think he does. He's had some MMA fights. He's done jiu-jitsu, yeah. But I don't see him as a true color guy. I see him more as a play-by-play with his voice, his personality, the way he talks. Great.
That's what I like about it, though, because I think that when you have guys like Dominic Cruz and Daniel Cormier, no disrespect to them, there's an element of broadcasting that
definitely.
I think Jimmy brings. And I don't even know how Jimmy learned it. I just think that he's got this kind of – he reminds me a lot of Rogan, really, I think is what it is. I think that, you know, he's
passionate.
A guy that – he's just – his delivery and his presentation is really good. That's all.
Yeah, but that's usually where the – play-by-play guy will go, right? So,
right.
I mean,
yeah, that's true.
The play-by-play guy is your guy that's going to hype and get excited and you know,
yeah.
Hype, oh my God.
But Jimmy notices a lot of little things too, like a lot of little intricacies that I find that other people
I think is good for more of a less educated crowd, a mm-hmm. more educated, like when I watch, I appreciate, you know, sometimes the Dominic Cruz's, you know, the DC's.
Well, I think Dominic Cruz is fantastic, yeah. And same with Cormier.
I think where... Now I'm talking like, again, I have so much to work on as a color. I'm not just bashing guys, but these guys have stuff to work on too. But someone like Dominic Cruz for me talks a little too much. I think he goes a little too long in explaining something. So if he's explaining a concept of the fight, so many things has happened while he's explaining mm-hmm. that thing. So he needs to kind of shorten
his
time.
That's another reason I like Jimmy. Because I find Jimmy
is excitement level where Dominic Cruz is a little bit more monotone, where Jimmy, oh my God, like he's excited, which comes with practice.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. That's why I like him. I think that there needs to be an element of entertainment, but I also think
for
Jimmy's
sure.
really smart. He's really good at explaining
he's amazing.
All things that are going on.
Yeah.
So, and I think Cormier is kind of the opposite. Cormier, like if you could combine Cormier and Dominic Cruz into one person, it would be like the ultimate cover.
Absolutely.
Guy.
Yeah. But everyone's saying DC is the guy right now that's the best color they're liking.
I'm not on that page.
No?
No disrespect to Cormier.
I like Brian Stann.
I actually like Cruz better than Cormier.
Really?
I thought Brian Stann was fantastic.
I thought Brian Stann was really
Brian
good.
Brian Stann was really good. I actually wouldn't be surprised. Like now that you mentioned it, I was thinking about that the other day when Jimmy Smith was on Rogan's show, that Jimmy Smith could be a good play-by-play guy.
Yeah, I think
I think he could be a good play-by-play guy. But I also think he'd be ideal for a three-man booth too. I think he is a good cog in that machine. As much
outside
as
of Rogan,
even though
I don't think I'd like to see him and
no,
Rogan
I wouldn't
together.
Mind seeing him and Rogan.
You would like to see it?
Yeah, I wouldn't mind.
Too similar. They're
very
both
similar.
Both on like level 10.
Yeah.
I like a guy maybe at level like. I mean, it's cool maybe a fight or two, but to hear. You know, Jimmy Smith and, you know, all that high, I need a little bit of a break in my 6 hours.
I think the two-man booth is actually better. I like two-man booths better than three-man booths. But
I mean, I guess it depends the ones in the three, you know? Depends the ones in the three. Like, I mean, I like Rogan as a two because I get to hear more of Rogan. I think he's, you know, makes it fun. But when you have some of the other guys with three, I'm like, eh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like Cruz in the three-person booth, too. But like you said, he gets a little long-winded at times, and that makes it tough.
I like it sometimes. I've done three-way commentary with Dustin Jacoby, Alistair Overeem. I did in last year, Uberhausen, where we had Rico Verhoeven versus Badr Hari, the first one in Collision, which was crazy. I called four fights with Alistair Overeem, which was super cool. But it was fun doing it with him because both as technical guys, we're able to back and forth off each other, being like, oh, you know, Badr Hari's jab's doing well. This is what so-and-so has to do. And then even like on the side, we're like side betting with each other for fun, mm-hmm. you know, because we're like, $20, Holtz can win. So I lost $20 to him. But I mean, that's just... It was fun to do it, and we were able to talk as martial artists and critique each other's techniques, see different perspectives, so I think it was good. And then Todd was the play-by-play. He was calling the hype, and he let me and Alistair kind of critique what's going on, how the rounds are being scored, what's being effective, what the other person needs to do. So I actually enjoyed it, but I think with the right person only.
What's going on with Glory right now? When's the next event?
Big milestone, Glory 50.
Nice.
Yeah, we have 50 shows.
Why you want us to number these shows, right?
So I know, because I was just doing some Glory work before I came. We were talking, because Glory right now on their Instagram and Twitter and Facebook, we have the Glory's 50th best moments.
Oh, wow.
So every day there's a new moment that made Glory so special. So I'm hoping I hope something of me is in there. I mean, they got to have something.
So about the leading gets knocked out.
Yeah, I'm going to. That's it. My contract is up. I'm not renewing if I'm not on the 50. It's just been great. So we're at Glory 50. It's going to be in Chicago. A lot of good fights, but I mean, Glory's just getting big, man. People need to just keep watching us. We're just putting on great shows. Our North American market's improving. Our European market's improving.
Did Chris Camozzi win, by the way?
Chris Camozzi won, yeah. Okay. He was mismatched. I wasn't, the guy he fought really wasn't at his level, but you know, Camozzi looked good. Thiago Silva was with us. He won. He looked pretty good. So it's good. That was one of our 50th moments. I think it was number 49. So you got to go
right,
on 48. Check it out. Yeah.
It was on your Glory
it's on the Glory
Instagram.
Yeah, they have their top 50.
Got to follow that.
So yeah, but it's been good. And then we already have Return of Badr Haar. He's coming back, but he's not fighting Rico. He's fighting Hezdi Gürges. March 3rd in Amsterdam. So it's going to be quick. February 16th, Chicago. March 3rd, we're in Amsterdam. And then April, we're going to Brazil, Sao Paulo, which I'm pretty excited
for. Have you been there before?
No, never been.
Nice, that'll be fun.
California, I think end of March is an option. And then May, I think we're in France.
When's the Toronto card happening? Let's go.
It's the commission. They're slowing us down. The paperwork's in. Everything's in. We're just waiting to just okay it. You know, just give us the okay. Give us the nod.
I want to go.
Yeah, it'll be fun. It'll be good. I'm telling you, if we have it here, people are really going to see. And I think it's just going to just take off. There's so much. The Muay Thai kickboxing community in Toronto and Ontario is so big. And I mean, it's just the problem is people have so there's little cliques in the kickboxing Muay Thai world. So if everyone decided to come together and really promote this sport, because the issue is still in stand-up striking is there's a divide between Muay Thai and kickboxing. And again, people in Muay Thai want to stick to the traditions of the Y crew, the headbands, the armbands, the slower fight, the rounds. But if everyone jumps on this kickboxing, even the Muay Thai community, I think we'll sell out every show that comes to Toronto. So I'm hoping it happens this year.
That's
the plan. They're looking for a couple times a year. So, I mean, we could have Glory Toronto kickboxing, the highest level here, twice a year. So we got to get that. We got to get on it.
We got to call. I'll give Ken Hayashi a call. Is he still there?
No, he's done now. Oh, okay. Yeah, he's gone. The acting guy. But I think it's just sitting at the highest level, you know?
Yeah.
I don't think even the commission has a chance.
Needs to stamp the papers.
Yeah, it's basically next.
Yeah.
Next.
Approved.
Approved. Done.
All right. So let's go to our next guest. She is fighting on the main card of UFC St. Louis against Jessica Rose Clark, who's 1-0 in the UFC after she beat Beck Rawlings very recently, actually. And Paige VanZant will be fighting on that card, and we're very excited to have her join the show, and she joins us right now. How are you, Paige?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
Of course. You know, our pleasure. You know, you're 4-2 in the UFC. Your only losses are against Michelle Waterston and now the champion, Rose Namajunas. Yet people, and even some fellow fighters, talk about you like you don't belong in the UFC at times. How do you manage to filter out the negativity that comes with being one of the bigger household names in the sport?
You know, I don't even hear it. I don't listen to that kind of stuff. I stay off social media. The only time I ever find out about that stuff is when I ask in interviews. I don't know. I just kind of treat myself, and I know how talented I am, and my coaches and trainers know how talented I am. So I just go out there and do my thing.
See, on the flip side of that, I feel like the general sentiment around you is that you're overrated. But personally, I think you're underrated. I mean, you're nearly a 2-1 favorite as an opener against Jessica Rose Clark. Now she's become the betting favorite here. Jessica just won a split decision over Beck Rawlings, who you beat convincingly. Does public support matter to you?
No, public support doesn't really matter to me because, you know, I think they're just fans out there watching the sport, and they aren't really as educated as the fight game is most people. So, but I mean, at the same time, I'm kind of used to being the underdog. I'm kind of used to being in that position. And but I know how talented I am, and I know what I'm capable of.
You obviously have your sights set on the UFC Flyweight Championship. It was just introduced. Nico Montano wins the Ultimate Fighter, becomes the champion. Before your debut in the UFC, you were supposed to be on the Ultimate Fighter, but were denied because you weren't legal drinking age at the time. Did you have any thoughts of being on the recent season of the Ultimate Fighter to contend for the title and try to fast-track yourself to a championship belt?
Yeah, You know, I think it would have been an awesome experience, especially because I would have been able to fight for a title. But I know that my path is the one that I'm meant to be on, and whatever happens to me, it's for a purpose, and there's a reason behind it. So I'm just excited with this fight coming up on Sunday. I'm excited to get back in there and show off what I can do. And especially since, you know, my home is at the 125 division, I think people will definitely be able to see that.
Your name did come up in an interview with Nico Montano recently on the MMA Hour, and she said she felt that neither yourself nor Valentina Shevchenko had earned a title shot yet. What do you think of those comments?
I don't have anything to say about it. I get ready for my fights, and that's just what I go out there and I keep winning fights, and things come to me that are meant to happen.
Nearly a year ago, you signed a book deal. The book's now being released in April. It's available for pre-order on Amazon. What do you think readers who check out your book are going to be surprised to learn about you that they didn't already know?
There's a lot. There's definitely a lot in the book that's kind of a tell-all, and they'll be able to really see who I am and why I became a fighter and what incidences and the circumstances in my life that pushed me to be who I am today, and it shaped me, and it really assures exactly who I am and the things I've went through, and people are definitely, it's going to be a real shocker.
What do you take? I mean, you've prided your career on kind of building yourself up outside of mixed martial arts with Dancing of the Stars and, you know, even Chopped Can. Is that something your brand is doing, and do you continue to do more of that kind of stuff to build yourself?
You know, I don't really do things to build myself. It's kind of, I just do what I love, and opportunities come my way, and if it's something I'm passionate about, I go for it. So Dancing with the Stars came up, and, you know, that's obviously something I'm very passionate about. So I jumped at the opportunity, and I was on a cooking show. I jumped at the opportunity. I wrote a book. That was something I did just because I love to do it. These opportunities come my way, and, you know, I've turned a lot of things down, too, though. I had a movie role come up, and I just thought it was way too inappropriate, and it didn't fit my image, it didn't fit my brand or who I was as a person, and so I had to turn that down. So it's really just I do what I want, and I love it.
Is the WWE one of those things? You know, Dave Meltzer once reported you were close to appearing on the WWE. How close was that to happening?
You know, I would love to do something with the WWE. They are an amazing organization. Obviously, you get to look. I love the whole like look behind it. I love everything they do. These girls get to just be beautiful and badass, and I think that's something that I emulate as well. And I would love to show off. So yeah, hopefully that opportunity does come up.
Now, as a female in a male-dominated sport and with your training, how do you take that? How do you deal with your sparring partners? How are you dealing with, you know, getting the proper sparring as well? What are you doing in camp for that?
You know, I feel like if you train with all men, I mean, a man is going to be way stronger than any female that I fight. So I get great training partners. I have amazing training down in Portland, Oregon. I get everything that I need and everything that I need.
How's Chael Sonnen looking? I know you guys trained together at the same camp.
Yeah, Chael's looking awesome. I get to train alongside Chael Sonnen every day. We do our training together and our conditioning together. So he looks awesome. I'm excited.
Is he ready? Are we going to see a good performance from him?
He's got a really big fight coming up.
Is he going to do well, or how's he looking?
He's excited. He looks awesome.
That's awesome.
You know, I recently read, before you got to the UFC, you basically got a cold call from Dana White. When you picked up that call, did you think it was a joke?
I did, yeah. I mentioned that before. You know, when I got the phone call from Dana, it was definitely a big shock. I couldn't believe it until, I mean, he's got a pretty distinct voice, and I finally was like, no, it actually is him. So it was shocking and exciting.
And how'd that conversation go?
He pretty much just said, like, hey, it's Dana. I picked you to be on the cast of The Ultimate Fighter. You're going to be competing for blah, blah, blah. And kind of broke it down from there. And then, unfortunately, I wasn't able to compete on The Ultimate Fighter. But, yeah, it told me that, and then I was like, all right, thanks. That's it.
With this middleweight division, is there anybody that you think would be a good matchup for you going forward? Is there anybody that you have your eye on?
No, I've never called anybody out. That's not my thing. I think people know that by now. I like to be more, I like to fight. I take the fights the UFC offers me. And I haven't turned one down yet, so I know there's all these rumors going around about me turning down fights, but, you know, I take what the UFC gives me, and I do it, and I love it, and it's my job, and I love what I do. So, no, I think whatever comes next, I have to win this fight on Sunday first, and that's all that matters.
Before we wrap this up, there's one thing I just wanted to ask you because of, your book, you touch on being bullied growing up. Do you think that there's a misnomer about bullying, that bullying, you know, people, that there's, I guess, a profile that people go after when it comes to bullying? I mean, you're obviously a very attractive girl. You have a lot of talents. You grew up doing dancing and now mixed martial arts. Do you think that bullying, you know, one of the points of your message is spreading that bullying can happen to anybody, anywhere, for any reason, and that you shouldn't, I guess, try to put people in a box of what the specific type of person that could be bullied is?
Yeah, that's definitely a part of the message. But I think for me, I want to share, you know, you never know what people's struggles are. And, you know, what I went through was awful and it was not fun. And it's more about just like showing that you can do anything, whoever you are. You don't have to be defined by outside sources. You can stand up and choose to rise. You have to choose to just be happy and put all the bullying in the past.
Yeah, it seems like a lot of your success has come from proving people wrong, from people doubting you or people picking on you. And I think that deserves to be applauded.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, definitely.
All right, well, best of luck this weekend. I think it should be a very, very exciting fight in the flyweight division, a very new division, a division that I'm sure you felt you should have been a part of all along. Unfortunately, it hadn't existed in the UFC yet, and now I guess those dreadful weight cuts are behind you.
Yep, definitely.
Well, best of luck, Paige. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks.
That was Paige VanZant joining us on the show. You know, I felt bad, Joe. I asked her if she, you know, people say that she doesn't belong in the UFC. She goes, I only hear it from the media, not from... I was like, oh, I guess I just kind of insulted her. I didn't mean to do that.
Yeah, you're a little. Yeah,
I was trying to say to her that, you know,
you're better than
warranted.
People are
yeah,
saying.
Yeah, yeah,
for sure.
I actually think she's become underrated as a result of being considered overrated.
You felt your point was a little aggressive. Came off wrong.
I guess so. Or maybe she thinks that I feel that way, which is
no. I thought it was a fair question. I think the way you
if she was 0-6 in the UFC, you can make that argument. She's 4-2. She's got a winning record.
Yeah, and she's lost to the top of the division. I mean, still young.
Yeah, lost the top of a division that she had trouble making weight in.
Yeah.
So who knows? I think at 125, it's going to be a breath of fresh air.
And she's 23.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
She's
23 years old. Like,
lots
I mean, that's
left.
Crazy. I think it's beautiful. It's crazy. She's doing such good things. I think she's just going to continue to do good things. She's young. She's positive. She's energetic. She's good to show. I mean, a pretty girl being in this sport and involved in martial arts and able to do a full-time career in it, just amazing to see. So good job on her.
Yeah, so we'll see how she fares this weekend. We'll be back next week. We've got a recap of UFC St. Louis, and then we can look ahead to that Boston card. No, we got a little bit ahead of ourselves and started doing it this week because it's such an exciting card with the heavyweight and light heavyweight title on the line in Boston next week. So we're looking forward to that.
Yeah, it's going to be good. I haven't seen, like you said, a heavyweight fight that I've been this excited for in a long time. So I'm pumped. I'm ready. I'm buying the pay-per-view.
Yeah, it's going to be awesome. And I'll be down there in Boston next week. So we'll have our regular podcast, and then hopefully I can put up an MMA show. TSN
there.
MMA show extra with a lot of the different interviews that I'll do on Media
Day.
Yeah,
like put like a nice clip of all the interviews together.
Yeah, be great.
And TSN, man, I every so often I go on and I watch all your interviews. I make sure I keep up with them. They're good. I like them.
Well, thank you. I do the best I
can.
I
like your style. You come out with the bow tie a lot of the times. And
no,
you...
I haven't done bow tie yet. And the reason why is I don't want to be the bow tie guy.
You don't want to be.
I have bow ties. And I really want to wear them, but I don't want to be like, oh, it's the bow tie.
Is that part,
of
your branding journalism now? Having the nice, you know?
Well, Ken Rosenthal is one of the best baseball
analysts,
or mm-hmm. I guess reporters. Mm-hmm. And he always wears a bow tie, and that's become his thing. But I'm worried if I wear a bow tie once, people are going to be like, oh, where's the bow tie?
Yeah.
So I'm a little bit hesitant about,
I like it, though.
About the bow tie.
Yeah, your interview skills are good.
Thanks, man.
They're
pretty
good. Very flow. They're natural. They're just, you're good with it.
Yeah. You know what? I don't get worried about it, though. Like, that's the thing about it. The thing
just
that I'm
yourself.
Always, the
you're
thing
natural,
I'm more concerned about is how I appear. I get very hung up on which shirt works with which jacket and all this stuff. But then when it comes to do the interviews, these guys get in front of me. I know the sport like the back of my hand. Then I just go.
Yeah.
And I'm interested in finding out information. I want to know certain things. I want to know how they feel about certain things and all of that. So
no, it's good. You're doing a good job with it. So
I
keep
it
up.
It. Well, same to you, my friend.
Thank you.
Glory's lucky to have you.
Thank you, sir.
All well, right. And we'll be back. We'll be back next week. It's going to be an exciting week to talk UFC.
Thanks for listening to the TSN MMA show. For all the latest UFC news, visit tsn.ca/UFC.